Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Scoop. I'm your host, Frank Chaparro, Director of Special Projects at The Block, and we're very excited to have Austin Reed from Falcon X joining us in studio. This is really special, Austin.
There we go. Well, Frank, I appreciate you having me out here and excited to be here.
Yeah, Jersey's excited to have you. This is the first time, with the exception of my colleague, Zach Abrams. So actually, there was one previous guest who we've had share the table with us, but this is the first external guest outside of The Block. So we won't count that. Maybe for folks who are unfamiliar with the firm, walk us through how business is going.
Yeah, no, happy to give that context. I know you're aware, we've seen a lot of recent market activity within crypto. So happy to talk about both Falcon X, and then we can talk about some of the activity that we're seeing on the institutional side of the market. Frank, if I take a step back and I think through, okay, what's the market activity that we've seen through Q1 and how's that affected our business? A couple of different things. Really, starting in Q4 itself, you saw a market turnaround, and that was reflected within prices ahead of the Bitcoin ETF announcement. From a Falcon X perspective, what we saw on the institutional side of the market was more institutions coming back into the crypto space, either building long positions during that time period or a number of them basically expressing their views through our derivatives desk. So we saw a lot of derivatives activity then, a lot of options activity through that time period. And we've seen that really continue through the ETF announcement itself. ETF got approved within that. I think we saw a short-term lull where you started to see the initial inflows ultimately come in.
Yeah.
And now I think what we're seeing is a big pickup, or we've seen continuous flow across the board from these ETF issuers. And I think the market overall feels like it's been a very positive outcome for the space.
And this view is basically from the counterparties that you serve, right? As a, we can call it maybe a prime broker
yep.
type of model where clients will come to you looking to sort of either hedge or trade, and they'll sort of do that through you versus facing off against, you know, myriad exchanges or different types of trading platforms.
Yeah, exactly. So to give some context in terms of what that looks like, and I think what you're kind of referring to is also the unique aspects of crypto market structure here too, right? So from a market structure perspective, and the way we sit is GAP Falcon X is an institutional prime brokerage within the cryptocurrency space. And if you look at what problem are we solving for institutions who are active within the market, Frank, like you mentioned, the challenge in crypto is there's so many different market participants
yeah.
in this asset class, whether those are exchanges, whether those are market makers, different venues that are quoting prices and liquidity. And so if I'm a net new hedge fund that's coming into the crypto market, it's actually quite a complex task for me to get up and running, right? I need whatever, a handful of different market makers that I'm signed up to, a handful of different exchange accounts. I then go sign up to those venues, distribute my balance sheet across those venues, and engage in trading activity through them. And so the way I see Falcon X in its simplest form is our goal is to decrease that complexity for institutional market participants who are active within the crypto market. And so what we do is we provide market-leading liquidity across spot and derivatives markets. On the derivative side, we've grown our business substantially over the last year. We're about 10% of global crypto options volume today. And from a total volume perspective, we're one of the larger trading firms in the world. I think last year for 2023, we did about 50% greater volume than Coinbase from an aggregate perspective. And so we see a lot of volume that are going through our pipes, basically people that are looking for greater liquidity and capital efficiency or hedging, like you mentioned.
So let's maybe talk about the state of the market, maybe the state of liquidity. There was an interesting report in Bloomberg that suggested that we've moved past the so-called Alameda liquidity gap, and the state of liquidity is a bit more robust than it was in the wake of the what I call the 2021 credit crisis. What is the state of liquidity, and how has the ETFs impacted that? It seems like those flows are driving everything. I tweeted this last night. Watch the flows because yep. you see them. When they're starting to slow down, price slows down. When they're picking up, price picks up. And that it seems like that's what's in the driver's seat.
Yeah, it's a great call out. Like, I think ETFs overall have definitely been driving this market, right? And so if you look at that just from an inflows perspective, like you're referring to, everyone is tracking those numbers, right? And the numbers have been quite strong, right? If you look at the net inflows of Bitcoin ETF to date, you're at roughly $12 billion. If you just look at that in contrast to other instruments, I think gold's an interesting analogy. It took about 3 years for gold ETFs to build to a $12 billion mark. Right. And so that's just the net inflows. Obviously, you have Grayscale that's an existing provider within that. And the total AUM of those vehicles is in the $30 to $40 billion dollar range. And so if I look at how has that affected the liquidity and dynamics of liquidity within the crypto market, look, a couple of different factors within that is like one, we've definitely seen more activity on U.S. based exchanges that are part of the pricing methodology for these ETFs themselves. And so you're seeing some more activity on U.S. exchanges. Within that, you're also seeing a lot of trading activity around these pricing windows. So that's 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern. What you've seen is that the amount of trading activity that's happened during that time period has increased quite substantially post-ETF. It's about doubled depending on the day. And obviously, the inflows vary from day to day. And so you've definitely seen some changes in dynamics in relation to liquidity. I think the important note, though, it's easy to sit in the U.S., as you know, and be very U.S.-centric with your view of the crypto market, right? ETFs are obviously driving global market right now. But I think more noteworthy, just from a recent market perspective in the last couple of days, is also the entrance of broader international retail. Right. If you think through liquidity and how that's reflected in the market right now, what you've seen is significant funding rates show up on various offshore exchanges. From our perspective, that's more of a reflection of international retail also coming to this market. And within that, I think you're seeing global liquidity just expand overall.
I see. So to an extent, you could say institutional liquidity is concentrating in U.S. and then retail liquidities maybe a bit more global, a bit more focused or centered in Asia?
So slightly different if I look at like just the overall crypto market, right? Overall crypto market is still dominated just from a percentage standpoint, looking at the distribution of exchanges around the world, is still mostly offshore, right? And I think the institutional activity—
Is that shifting though?
You've seen definitely more that's come onshore, and you've seen an increase in relation to the ETFs. And specifically, I think, like we mentioned, around some of the ETF time periods themselves. And so it's definitely still a global asset class. I think market makers are trading the BTC that they're building for these positions in both the U.S. and international exchanges. And it's really a question of where you can get the best overall liquidity.
Understood. So you mentioned that sort of your volumes was last year or last quarter were about 50% higher than Coinbase's last year.
Yeah, for full year 23.
For full year 23. Obviously, you know, if you look at spot exchange volumes, we have the data on the dashboard. It's not quite at the level of the previous peak. I think it's probably topped 100 billion per day across the very exchanges that we track. Down from, I mean, I think at bottom we were looking at 10 billion a day, so 10x sort of increase there. Is the sort of OTC market, does it track spot, or have we seen an even bigger increase in sort of in these non-lit markets?
Yeah, so great question. A couple different components there. And if I look at our business, I can tie that to basically where we're seeing some of these increases from a volume perspective. And specifically over the last year, too. Like, you know, like the crypto market's changed a lot since the beginning of 23 to the end of 23.
Yes. And so quickly, right? Like, if you even just think about sentiment from last September to now, it's like night and day.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. Right. And I think we've seen that also just from my perspective, you see that directly reflected in the types of conversations that you're having on a day-to-day basis, right? Either with like institutional market participants, things like job applicants coming into crypto companies and like a peak in interest. And obviously, like post-ETF, there's been no shortage of media attention around the asset class. Although it does still feel, and to your point, like exchange volumes are still not at the levels that we were during previous cycles yet. So, you know, there's still room to potentially grow within this. But if I look at it from a FalconX perspective and like, okay, what's driving our volume growth and why are more institutions coming to us versus some other players within this space? A couple of different components. One, I would say the depth of liquidity that we're able to offer in both spot and derivatives markets tends to be greater than you can get on any individual exchange venue. So the use case there would be if you're a hedge fund that's coming and looking to buy $100 million in Bitcoin, we're a venue that can give you a price to do that in an efficient and effective manner. The other area that we've seen a lot of activity and growth, which I referred to a little bit earlier, is our options business itself, and that's driven more and more volume for the firm itself. If I look at like, okay, what are the drivers in our options business and why is that interesting and unique for the market itself? The core insight from my perspective is that you're seeing the growth of regulated derivatives markets in the U.S., right? Frank, to the point you brought up earlier around like the distribution of volume U.S. globally, we're a firm that's registered with the CFTC as a swaps dealer in the United States. We're the only firm in the digital asset space that is registered with that license. What that enables us to do is sell a wide variety of OTC derivatives contracts. And the reason I mention that is the profile of institutions that we see coming on to trade those contracts is very strong, right? It's like some of the largest hedge funds in the world, macro hedge funds, banks, asset managers. And so those profile of institutions are coming to the crypto space. I think the question is, what instruments are they using to basically express their views on the market? And so that's been another driver. And then the last thing I would just say is if you look at the exchange trading capabilities, we do offer our clients the ability to trade on various exchanges depending on the jurisdiction that they're live and active within. You see more and more systematic traders who have come to the crypto markets during bear markets even because they don't care if the market's going up or down, right? Their goal is to generate alpha in a non-correlated manner. And oftentimes there's great opportunities to do that in crypto.
Well, maybe we can talk about derivatives just a bit, right? So in terms of the growth of that market, I think in traditional markets, it's an order of magnitude larger than spot. How do you see that segment expanding in terms of new types of products, right? Like one thing we could see is options on those ETFs. Yeah. You've seen a number of different swaps come to market. You can have, potential, variance swaps or things like that. How do you see that market growing?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think a couple of different components, and I'll touch on some of the areas that you mentioned directly there. We do think that one of the core areas that you'll see growth from around the ETFs will be a onshore U.S. regulated options market in a cash settled manner around those different ETF instruments. And I think there's an interesting question as to like why that matters for the overall space and how that affects like short, mid, and long-term adoption in this asset class. And what I think is interesting is if you look at other asset classes, what the introduction of more robust and liquid derivatives market means in the long term is actually a decreasing in volatility over time.
Yeah.
Right? Because you basically have the ability to hedge in those assets. And so to the extent that we're able to catalyze that as an industry and growth, especially with these ETFs being a potential catalyst there, that's an area that we're quite excited about and we think would actually drive longer term adoption of this asset class, right? I think one of the challenges that everyone faces within crypto is just the volatility of the underlying assets. And so in a world where you now have expanded access to those assets, it's growing. Like we've talked about, those stats have been very good. How do you look longer term to provide hedging and other mechanisms to make that market more stable? And so that's an area that we're interested in. I think that looks like regulated options markets around these ETFs itself. And then you'll probably also have continued growth of crypto native options markets. Like I mentioned, we're very active within that space. Frank, the other area that I think is interesting, and it ties into the part of the conversation we're having around inefficiencies in this market too, and opportunities that are brought up from a yield generation perspective, is we are looking at a world where I think most people believe interest rates are going to go down at some point over the next year, right?
Sure.
TBD on exactly what that time frame will be and the number of cuts that we're going to get over a given time period. But what I am starting to see in some of our conversations with large institutional allocators is them look at yield generating opportunities in crypto in preparation for an anticipated drop in the instruments that they're holding in other asset classes. And so what do those look like, and how does that relate to the derivatives market? One area that we're seeing a lot of interest in right now today is people looking to put on basis trades either directly or in a swap format. So that's short futures, long spot,
interesting, yeah.
Collecting the funding rate within that. The other side of the retail leverage that I mentioned earlier is that that trade was yielding for the past couple of weeks like 30 to 50%, right? And so there's substantial opportunities for return in this asset class in a market neutral manner. There's obviously risks associated with that that people need to wrap their heads around and work through, but we're seeing a lot more activity there. And I think as the market continues to grow and continues its trajectory, what it appears to be upward and people are preparing for continued growth there, I think we'll see more and more of those opportunities. And I think that looks like more and more regulated derivatives in the US and internationally.
Once that benchmark rate comes down, they're going to, different types of investors are going to be pushed to find yield elsewhere. And they're preparing for that, is what you're saying.
Correct. And I think there's, you know, what we don't know right now is what the correlation between yields and crypto and other asset classes will be, right? If you think through the growth of crypto over the past, I've been in crypto full-time for about 7 years now. Asset class has been going, you know, much longer than that. But the majority of the history was in a basically zero interest rates environment, right?
Yeah, we talk about this on the show a lot. I mean, even with this rally, right, to 70K, if you think about this cycle relative to the previous cycle when we ran up to 69, it was in a zero interest rate environment, and at the same time, there was a ton of credit.
Yeah,
and a really sort of unbridled credit market, right? And so you had folks overlevered. There's a funny anecdote that I have of Suzu at a dinner where an investor, I guess this I wasn't at the dinner, but an investor told me the story where he was asking about his allocation or what he was going to be allocating to. And Sue basically said, you know, we're all in. There's no dry powder. And that's when he went home and he sold everything. So when you think about that backdrop, right, I mean, the credit market had grown to, I could probably guess, over $20 billion, right, if you think about it.
I'd say higher, right? Because Genesis was like 15, 20. Right?
Fair enough.
And so if you look at BlockFi, Celsius of the world, but yeah.
So, what would you reckon? I mean, above 50 maybe. Over 25 for sure. And interest rates were at zero. And in this run-up, you don't have either of those things.
Yep.
And that sort of seems bullish to me.
Yeah, so a couple of things to unpack here, and I think it's a great point looking at the difference in the lending markets here. What I would say is it's definitely a gap within the space versus where we were during the last cycle. When I say a gap, I would say the availability of spot lending in crypto, not nearly as high as what it used to be. Like you mentioned, and we talked about, you had Genesis itself just at $15 billion. You had BlockFi, Celsius, Voyagers of the world, all active within that market. Now they are all gone. Right. And so I think one of the challenges that we've seen institutional market participants face is basically, where can I borrow from in these markets? We're active on that side of the space, but there's not that many people that are active from a borrow and lend perspective. But to tie this back to the interest rate point, I do think what's interesting here and what we don't know is what that correlation will be, right? Because there's a perspective in the market that if interest rates go down, that will be good for crypto. Right? Mm-hmm. Risk on asset. Maybe you're looking at future inflation, people allocating to the asset class as an inflation hedge. And within that, you'd expect demand for dollars to actually increase. Right? And so, do you see more durable long-term yield within this asset class? I think the jury's still out. We're early within the cycle. We haven't gone through that yet, but we're definitely seeing sophisticated institutional players start to have that conversation.
What does the penetration look like into that segment of market participant? I think we saw on Coinbase's earnings that, I don't want to get this wrong, I think it was 1/3 of the world's top 100 hedge funds have onboarded. I'm like 90% sure that's the stat. But basically they're pointing to increased interest among these larger types of funds. Yeah. You can think like the millenniums of the world. What's penetration look like into that segment of investor?
Yeah. Yeah, so I would look at the institutional market in a couple different segments, right? And so I think you saw a lot of really the last cycle, as you remember, right? You had Paul Tudor Jones come out in favorable of Bitcoin. The perspective around that was like Bitcoin as a digital gold. And within that, in that last cycle, that was one of the catalysts that I think from my perspective really kicked off institutional adoption of this asset class, right?
Yeah.
I've been at Falcon X for context like 5 years now, so really since inception. And you can imagine, Frank, like 5 years ago when you're talking about institutions in crypto, you were looking at like $50 to $100 million crypto native firms for the most part, with the larger market participants within the space. And so if I think through this over the cycles, like I think last cycle, what you saw was large hedge funds coming into this space, macro hedge funds come in, allocate to this asset class. Some of them are still here today. Some of them have been here through those markets, and a number of them are coming back, right? And so I think the Coinbase stat they put out is a good proxy for the activity of those institutions in the space. I think the more notable side, just from a quantum of capital perspective, and we're seeing that right now, is the large asset managers and the corresponding kind of ETF flow that we're seeing. And the way I kind of see that play out is I still think we're potentially in the early stages of that life cycle, right? When you talk to people who are close to the issuers or at the issuers themselves, the perspective is right now the majority of that flow has been self-directed retail to date, which means you're still waiting on a larger unlock from significant pools of capital, whether those are RIAs, financial advisors in the US, that have the ability to really move size here over time. The reason I mentioned that from an adoption lifecycle perspective is I think we're going to see that as a rolling process over the next year plus, as wirehouse broker dealers start approving these instruments, as other independent RIAs start approving these instruments. It's not like these institutions turn on and it's at the snap of a finger those products are launched. So I think that's an area of the market that we're definitely watching. The penetration is growing, but it's still relatively early, and we haven't seen everyone come
in. What do those flows look like in terms of how does it impact your desk?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, is it just, spending more time at the desk, or is it actually changing or impacting the way you do business?
Yeah. Great question. Look, if I look at Falcon X and kind of what I talked about at the beginning, one of the main focuses for us over the past 5 years has been building the, market leading trading infrastructure and the ability to take down significant size. And so what I'd say is, like, I think that this process is something we've been building for a while, and it's overall reflected very positively on our business. The number that we put out just post the launch of the ETF instruments itself was on the first day we did about 30% of the overall creation transactions. And we've continued to be very active across the market trading these ETF instruments and helping issuers from a creation perspective basically go out and purchase that BTC. And so if you look at like what that means across our desk, what it means is
adds a bit of consistency, doesn't it? Right? Like that effectively means that, you're going to have to at 4 p.m. or whatever it is, buy a consistent clip of Bitcoin for these issuers.
Yeah, exactly. So the team's ready to basically do those transactions on a daily basis. Some days are greater or different than others. And so there's planning exercise that goes into that. And I think the important thing from our perspective is just really understanding the market liquidity and dynamics around it.
How does that work? Like, how do you get a sense of liquidity when these big orders are coming in from the Fidelities of the world and you need to then go out and source that Bitcoin and you don't have the wholesalers and liquidity is fragmented? How do you perfect that process? What does that like look like?
Yeah. So what I would say is, like I mentioned, I'd say it's both a constant evolution and something we've been working on for a long time. And so we feel very good about our trading infrastructure and technology that really enables it, right? As you can imagine, like this is a purely technological trading game that you're playing there when you're looking at tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars of transactions that are happening within the crypto space. And so each instrument is actually a little bit different. Some of them have similarities in terms of the index price that they're based off of, but you're looking at the different indexes over that time period. You're preparing hedges for those vehicles, and you're making sure that you have the ability to go out and acquire that. And then you try and, you know, basically provide the best experience to the customer, which typically looks like giving them the most competitive price at the largest size that they can see within the market.
It's interesting. I remember, if I hearken back to like 2017, I wrote a story about a trading desk called B2C2. And at the time, they were starting to get orders in the $10 million range. And I think he said they had gotten one order for $50 million. It was like massive. It was a massive deal back then. And I had a similar story with Circle. They expanded their ticket size from like 250 to 500, or their minimum order size, that is, from 250, or maybe it was 100 to 500. And that was a big deal because it was, you know, this was that first sort of institutional cycle that we saw. What is the standard now? What sort of is the minimum ticket size, and how big are they getting?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because it depends on the profile of customer that we're servicing. So on some sides, our customers actually want very, very small ticket sizes.
Yeah.
Those are typically like the higher frequency traders, some of our customers that serve end retail. And so the range in ticket sizes that we service today is like less than a dollar to 500 million plus. And I think that that's the complicating factor in terms of figuring out how to be most active and best in this asset
class. Is 500 million the ETF issuer?
So those are ETF issuers. You can look at the publicly available data,
sure,
in terms of what some of the day one, or I should say the continuous prints have been. Some of them have been in, you know, the hundreds of millions of dollars range, though.
Pretty insane.
Yeah.
When you think about flows, one question I think we see a lot on Twitter and we talk about and discuss internally at the Block is the extent to which this is being driven by institutions or retail. And it's kind of a thorny question to unravel because, you know, you see the proliferation of meme coins and Coinbase is rising through the App Store ranks, and it makes you think that this is retail. And to your point, even with ETF flows, right? You mentioned, and a lot of folks who have come on the show have mentioned that to a large extent, this is just folks within their self-directed brokerage account buying ETFs, Bitcoin ETFs for the first time. But then you have this whole institutional narrative. So it I guess the question is, how early are we in both the retail cycle of this market and the institutional? Because I feel like they're not necessarily the same.
Yeah, I'm be curious to get your thoughts, especially on the retail side too, but I'll share my perspective here. I think what can confuse these from a narrative perspective is also that they're correlated, right?
Yeah.
And so when we talk about institutional activity in crypto, from my perspective, like the largest asset managers in the world coming into this asset class is institutional activity that we're seeing drive this market today. But to the point, there's nuance in terms of what's driving those flows, right? Mm. So those ETF instruments themselves may be getting purchased by individual retail users, right? And so there's definitely, you know, it's not 100% one way or the other. What I would say in terms of what we saw on the institutional side of the market is we saw substantial activity really in Q4 with people coming back to the market. I think our client base overall remains very optimistic on crypto through the end of year. I think the general perspective is crypto is poised for a positive year. Bitcoin, obviously, you have the ETFs. People are continuing to watch the flows there. Halving is upcoming. I think what people are watching with the halving is right now, for example, you're looking at Bitcoin ETFs are purchasing 6 to 9x the amount of Bitcoin that's mined on a daily basis, right? And so what we're kind of going through is a supply shock in that system, looking at Bitcoin as a commodity. After the halving, obviously the supply gets cut even further and you see less that's coming onto the market. And so I think from a narrative perspective, there's definitely there's continued momentum behind BTC. ETH, you have ETH upgrade. Solana, we've seen a lot of activity in. And then you have everything that's going on with alts across the board. From our client base, what I would say is during 21 range, right, like that last bull market, we saw on average institutions transacting 5 to 7 tokens, depending on the persona that they were. Right now, we've seen the majority of activity be in BTC running up to the ETF announcement. Now we've seen that even out a little bit. So I think just after ETF announcement, to quantify that a little bit, Frank, you were looking at BTC representing, or the BTC to altcoin ratio being roughly 3 to 1 post ETF and through that time period. Now that's about 1.8 to 1. So what that basically suggests is Bitcoin still leading from an institutional market perspective in terms of the amount of volume, but you're seeing people move more into the alt side. Look, on the retail side of the market, we talked about it a little bit. You're definitely seeing some activity around meme coins and other assets. I think that funding rates and looking at those from an offshore exchange perspective are also a good proxy to international retail. If you look at someone that's basically putting on a position at 30 to 50% annualized cost to go long on some of these offshore exchanges, that's likely retail and not institutional. And so I think you're seeing a convergence of both. But I'm curious from your seat, you were mentioning, you know, some of the metrics you're looking at on the retail side.
Yeah, there's a few metrics that we look at. I think the Coinbase App Store rankings, a big one, you know, Google search volume of certain coins like Bitcoin and Ethereum and Solana give another good indication of retail interest and engagement, social metrics as well. So you look at like the extent to which folks are following accounts like Binance and Coinbase or even the block to a certain extent. I mean, the Twitter following increases when retail's really getting manic, as it were. Those are some of the things. It's just interesting when you've been in the market for so many cycles. Each new cycle kind of adds a few more things to that list. Like, I think if I took a look at this, I almost wrote about it in the newsletter, but I didn't. We peaked when almost every single major sports deal was announced. So whether that was FTX, Heat Arena, or Blockchain.com, Cowboys, that was right at the top. So that's another thing I'd keep an eye on. If another stadium gets named after a crypto firm, that's when I might start moving into stables.
There you go. Okay, well, I can let you know that we're not going to be naming any stadiums anytime soon. So
yeah,
you can take us off that
list. That's good news. That would be – and then there was another funny one that my colleague Steven shared with me, but I can't remember it off the top of my head. But that was new. That was a new thing that happened last cycle. I'm sure this cycle will bring its own mania or have its own idiosyncrasies that point to froth. I mean, 2021 was probably just like the Cambrian explosion of leverage and the basis trade.
Yeah.
And then this cycle's the ETF flows. And then that kind of just, it changes the game.
Agree. I think it'll be interesting to see how this cycle plays out, right? Because to your point, what you're seeing is slight differences just from a market structure perspective that I think are notable just being driven by the fact that you have net new capital that's actually coming into the space through some of these ETF instruments. And look, on the lending side, I think it's a great point. We've talked about it a little bit as well, too. There's definitely a void in the market versus where it was. But at the same time, I think you're not seeing unnatural market behavior that you may have been seeing during the last cycle, right? To talk a little bit about where we've positioned within this, right? Like, we've been active lending in the crypto space for 4+ years at this point, right? Including over the last cycle. And within that, we just approach that market differently, right? In terms of the risk frameworks that we have to extend credit or leverage to our customers, in terms of the over-collateralization that we require. And what that's enabled us to do is be a durable company through those cycles. And I think part of this is you're seeing the companies that were best risk managed survive and continue to thrive within these markets today. And so my hope is that over time, you'll see the introduction of more capital into this space. I think the companies that are in this space today generally know how to risk manage better than some of the companies that, you know, are unfortunately not anymore. And this should be a natural evolution.
They've hired some more credit risk analysts, I guess.
Yeah, I think, look, Frank, probably not surprising to you, just from my seat and talking to like a lot of institutions within this space, versus last cycle, things like risk risk, compliance, some of the operational, you know, risks too, are something that's top of mind for everyone who's entering this asset class. And I think that's actually healthy, right? Like if you have institutional market participants, I think what's healthy within that is a level of due diligence that is being done on those players for them to be active within that space.
Have you noticed crypto exchanges maybe becoming more robust in terms of, you know, what they're sharing in, as far as proof of reserves go, different sort of standards around listings or their own sort of the robustness of their own platforms?
Yeah, what I would say on the exchange side,
is there a maturation there happening?
The exchange side is variable, right? And I think the exchange side is variable depending on region, types of product offerings that people are running, and the exchange itself. But look, Frank, I think we're actually at a really interesting paradigm shift potentially in how the evolution of that exchange space is looking. And I think that's where a lot of the exchanges are playing for in the next, like, call it 1 to 3 years, which is you're seeing outside of the US, you basically have clear crypto regulation in most major jurisdictions. Right. And there's frameworks that are out and people are going through the process of basically registering within that. I think the interesting element to watch will be how that affects the exchange market itself. Right. So we've been in an era of the global crypto exchange that services everyone from every region, basically ex-US. Right. It's like US mm-hmm. crypto and then you have global crypto, and global crypto has kind of enabled or, you know, exchanges have faced a wide variety of people from different regions and jurisdictions. I think our perspective is as you see these regulations introduced more regionally, whether that's in the EU with MiCA, whether that's in the UK, whether that's in Hong Kong, you're going to see more of these exchanges open, regional specific exchanges. And within that, you'll likely see a further fragmentation actually of some of the liquidity that's in the space. Some of them will be able to pull in global liquidity in these different areas. But I think we're at an interesting moment for the cryptocurrency space in terms of how the exchange market plays out over the midterm here.
You'll see the rise of like more local regional players.
I wouldn't write off the global players. I think the global players will continue to be leading exchanges within the world because you have the network effects of the liquidity that they access. I think the question will be the means through which people access that liquidity, right?
I see.
Are they doing that through their locally regulated venues? Are people like FalconX facilitating that across different regions, across different borders? Obviously, depending on how the rules and regs shake out in each individual jurisdiction.
When you think about these conversations that you're having with the net new market participants, maybe profiles, the profiles, a hedge fund type client, what are the impediments for some that have maybe not onboarded yet that's keeping them from maybe going into the market fully?
Yeah, it's a good question. And so it definitely depends on like the segment itself, right? So like we service, like we've talked about everyone from like hedge funds, proprietary trading firms to asset managers to banks, right? And so across that segment, people have different hurdles that they basically see. On the more like larger traditional financial services side, especially in the US, there's still regulatory components for people to be active. Banks are a good example there, right? They have capital requirements that make it prohibitive for them to touch spot crypto. And so I think that's influenced how they're active within the space. That's why the majority of bank activity that we see is in OTC derivatives markets, mm-hmm. right? Because they're CFTC regulated instruments. They fit exactly in to their current structures and trading strategies. And so that's in one segment. On the asset manager side, I think there's also some regulatory hurdles, like ETH ETF would be a good example there. I think the general market, obviously post-Bitcoin ETF, people were preparing for an Ethereum ETF. I think most sophisticated market participants right now think that's unlikely. And so I think that would be a hindrance to further growth within that segment. But I think it's growing and evolving over time, right? And some of those other market participants, all I have really seen over the last year is those hurdles drop for them to be active within the space. But it's kind of a question of who someone is, how they're regulated, where they're in the jurisdiction that they're active in.
Makes sense. So looking to the next year, how do you expect in the medium term, short term markets to evolve in crypto?
Yeah. Great question. So if I think through the evolution of crypto markets this year and what's kind of on the calendar and what our clients are watching, We talked about it already. Bitcoin ETF. Mm-hmm. I think despite that being a narrative that's continued to play over and over again, it's going to be important throughout the year, right? Mm. We'll continue to look at flows. And I think the important thing for the market to watch through this is who are the net new RIAs and wirehouse financial advisors that are enabling these instruments. Most of them, especially the larger ones, still have not turned this on for a lot of their clients. And so there's still a significant opportunity for growth in those instruments. And that's what I see a lot of the market continuing to focus on there. I think we'll see plenty of activity around the halving, some of the more crypto native components, whether that's Ethereum upgrade, continued evolution of Solana, Solana ecosystem. We have clients that are very focused on, you know, building positions in some of their higher conviction alt names too. But I think you're also looking at a questionable macro backdrop, right? And so I think that remains the question. And then I know a number of our institutional clients right now are watching U.S. elections, right? Mm. And so the question is, okay, not just in the U.S. actually, but globally, there's over 70 elections globally this year. A perspective was that you would see looser monetary policy ahead of those, basically in preparation for those elections in different regions. I don't know that we're seeing that in the U.S. We're starting to see, you know, expectations on number of rate cuts pull back a little bit. But I think macro will be a component that people continue to watch. But I think overall, from a crypto market perspective, like I said, I've been in the space a long time. The profile and scale of institutions that are coming in is as strong as we've ever seen it. And so that makes me quite optimistic for the mid to long term here.
Flows and macro. That's what we need to watch.
There we go.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the program.
I appreciate it, Frank. Had a fun chatting today.
Absolutely. And The Scoop will be back for you again with another great guest. Have an awesome day.